commence primary ignition.
This is Star Wars.
Look out!
Core World News.
You may fire when ready.
From the bright center of the galaxy, I'm Grex Kondak, and you're listening to Core World News, your holiday news show for in-depth coverage and analysis for the latest stories from around the galaxy. Here is your news segment rundown for April 17th, 2020. Commander Cody's Clone Wars Conspectus. But first, actors Stellan Skarsgård and Kyle Soler join the Cassian Andor series. Now their hosts, Ben Grant and Adam, to discuss.
Thank you very much, Grex. And we are here for another week.
Core World News. Can't wait to see Kyle Soler in the Cassian Andor. That's going to be amazing.
Yes. I have to think he is an Imperial, right? I mean, he's the most Imperial ever Imperialed into the Imperialness of the Empire.
Stellan Skarsgård, we're talking.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I mean, that's an easy guess, right? It's like, it's funny that Disney's actually not doing the whole British kind of the foppish British gent as the Imperial officers, and more so going for, you know, people from Scandinavia, people, Germanic people. Like, it's really digging into what the roots of the Imperials are meant to be associated with in, you know, our earthly history, and that is space Nazis. And it's like, wow, is this going to go and real? If they do cast Stellan Skarsgård as an Imperial officer, like, I think this could be a really, really dark, you know, association or parallel with what has happened in our history in terms of casting these sorts of, you know, Northern European actors as Imperials. It's a different take, but I don't know if he's going to be Imperial.
I think he's going to start as Imperial, and he's going to defect because he is. I was just looking up. He's 68 right now. So in Star Wars universe land, that means he was fairly, like, he dealt with the Old Republic quite a bit. He was probably one of the naval commanders in the Old Republic, right? Before that. And so I always was weirded out when people stuck around, like, from that to the Empire. Like, I get why you would stick around for a while.
Right.
And then when you're getting to, like, Star Wars times, like to original trilogy, why you would stick around, because it goes from being a very, like, whatever to fascism. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. And especially since, like, these are the people that fought alongside the Jedi, and these are the, you know, in war, and we're going to talk about Clone Wars soon. So, you know, we're going to get a true glimpse of this, and they make reference to it, but you can't just have your chancellor or new emperor say, oh yeah, by the way, the Jedi were bad, and be like, oh, that makes sense. Because, I mean, fought together, and you're like, well, if the Jedi are bad, then I'm bad, because, you know, we were shoulder to shoulder through all these trials. It'd be hard to do that. I mean, to go against what I was just saying, I mean, what if he's a mentor for Diego Luna's Cassian Andor, you know, like, what if he's like old, like, you know, he's out of the picture and dies somewhere in this before.
He's like Robert Redford in the Spy Games.
Yes, exactly.
Totally. That'd be cool. Yeah. That'd be cool. Yeah, that's actually interesting. It's impossible to do guesswork on, you know, just a simple kind of casting. I guess it's a confirmed casting news point bulletin now. But it's impossible to guess what he is. But if I had to guess, he could be K2SO's, like, first owner, because he's a big name.
Oh, okay.
And they might the origin of K2SO might be a big part of that first season.
Yeah.
And I wouldn't be surprised if it's Stellan Skarsgård and K2SO to start. And then K2SO goes to Cassian, you know, towards the end of the series.
That makes sense.
That'd be pretty funny if it was a K2SO, like, POV for, like, the first couple episodes. That'd be pretty sweet.
That'd be awesome. I love that idea. So the thing about Stellan Skarsgård is that he can play menacing and then also paternalistic pretty easily. He can switch between. Like, I mean, he's Eric Selving from Thor and Avengers. Like, he's
I was going to ask you guys, what if he's just Eric Selving again?
Yeah. Well, like, that character has no menace to him, right? Like, it's a very, kind of just out there old dude. Then in next year, he's playing Baron Harkonnen in Dune, which is, like, the big bad in Dune, right? Like, that's a shift, right? And so, like, I feel like if as an actor, you can shift that much, why wouldn't you put that in the place if you can on screen, right? Which to me seems like maybe he is maybe he's a double agent, maybe he's working both sides, maybe he has some, maybe he is an Imperial, but he has some questions about it, right? Like, I feel like, and that kind of plays into maybe being Cassian's mentor, right? This person who has seen both sides of this war.
Yeah, he has serious range. I mean, he, like we talked about, he's this kind of funny, kind of a screw loose kind of old man in Thor. And then he's also, you know, these major villains in the upcoming Dune, and then also Girl with the Dragon Tattoo and other films where he's just played this really, really maniacal, nefarious, you know, bad guy. And it would be fun to play that twist where he is a mentor and then turns dark. That would be great. I could get into that. That would be cool. I just don't. I don't know if he fits the kind of rebel mold. Like, I don't know how he would fit into being the mentor character. Well,
I mean, I could see it going there. I rewatch the Star Wars movies actually pretty seldom. I don't dip in. I wait for special times. And for some reason, the mood had struck me the other night. Maybe it was the quarantine. I don't know. But I watched the duology, the Rogue One straight into New Hope, which again, it's like a New Hope. How many times have I seen that? But like, Rogue One is breathtaking. It was amazing. Just like, first of all, it was, I love that movie more every time I see it. But a lot of those rebel commanders, it's an interesting time for the rebellion where it's like, you've got the real effects of the partisans led by Saw Gerrera. And it's really made the Rebel Alliance look at themselves in the mirror and say, what differentiates us from them? Who are we? Like, are they getting the results? How militant can we be? And there's some militant people there. I mean, the handler for Cassian Andor, I don't have his name off the top, but, you know, he was the one that was like, just kill him. Just go in there and kill Galen Erso.
I want to say it's Draken, but I don't know.
I like that. That sounds.
I was like, is it General Merrick or is it Draken? I
think Merrick's the X-wing, the pilot.
Yes, I think you're right. I think it's
But you know who I'm talking about, and I mean, we know where Mon Mothma stands. You know, diplomatic to a fault, but she has some people, and we know that like Cassian Andor has done some seriously bad stuff, and I love that ragtag group of assassins at the end. Like, I'm hoping we see some of those actual characters return. It would be great if like some of those people that were like essentially background characters like have bigger roles in this, and like we said, see them doing some of the things that convert them into where they're going. But it was a different rebellion back then. It was a desperate rebellion. It was, you know, like, where do we draw the line, you know, to save people's, like, how many lives do we take to save people's lives? I don't know. It was interesting. And that's where I think I could see Skellen sort of sliding in there.
Does that make sense? I think this is the story we get that's kind of convinced Cassian that he is just a soldier and the person who does the dirty work for the rebellion, right? Like, I think that's kind of where we get to is the end of this is like, he has made a tough decision. And I love the opening of Rogue One where we see him having to make that tough decision and just straight up kill an informant.
I mean,
right?
Like, that was akin to the throne room scene in TLJ where I was like, whoa, this is not the movie I was expecting. And I'm very excited to watch, you know, on. I would love, I mean, my ultimate wish is that they'd Trojan in some sort of cataloging of the Death Trooper program in the Cassian Andor series, and Stellan Skarsgård could be the instructor of Death Troopers. Because I mean, with Alphabet Squadron and what you're getting with, you know, the author of that book, I'm forgetting the author of that book, but I love all the Death Trooper commentary in that book. I think it's just outstanding. I would love to go in depth live action with Death Troopers because I think it's something that we got glimpses of in Rogue One, but it would be fun to see how that program began. You know, who was the first instructor? Maybe Cassian and Stellan Skarsgård's character were part of the same kind of tragic event where like everyone was murdered in a village and one guy decides to go, you know, start the Death Trooper program. One guy decides to go be a spy for the rebellion. You know, it's like, that would be a fun way to pull in Stellan Skarsgård.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. It's Alexander Freed is the author.
Alexander Freed. I knew it was Alexander. I just didn't know the last name. Yeah. Perfect. And yeah, it's Alpha Squadron. Again, one of my favorite books that's been released since Disney took over. Absolutely love that book and love all the Death Trooper content and the commentary in that book. It's actually part of it's actually like I would love a whole book on Death Troopers and that whole program because I think they're fascinating.
Yeah, they just sort of dropped them into Rebels. They were just like all of a sudden they were there and had to deal with them. And they also dropped Saw Gerrera in the same way. So it was sort of peripheral, even though, I mean, the Ghost Squadron was sort of in the Phoenix Squadron, actually. Sorry. Was very much in the mix at that point. They might not have, you know, sort of seen that other side of it. So that would be a great story to hear.
Yeah, totally. That'd be cool. And then the other guy, Kyle Soler. I am not super familiar with his work. I think he's been in Anna Karenina, obviously in the show Poldark. Fury.
Oh, is he the main character in Poldark?
He's Francis Poldark. I don't know if that's the main character of Poldark, but
I have
that seems to check out.
I think I've seen I saw a season of Poldark, he's cool.
Yeah, cool. So he's in there.
Interesting is this. I was kind of looking up his Wikipedia page. He was born in Connecticut, raised in Virginia, but does a lot of work in England, which is interesting. So it sounds perfect, right up Star Wars alley.
That's Star Wars right there.
Yeah.
Cool, man. Well, yeah, this is great news. Other news, we heard another confirmation about Rosario Dawson being in The Mandalorian, Grant?
That's right. I think Deadline report. I mean, after a couple weeks back, Variety and Hollywood Reporter reported that Rosario Dawson was in Mandalorian season 2 and that she was indeed playing Ahsoka Tano. And then now we got another report from Deadline saying the very same thing. So it's like, it's all but certain that she's in the show at this point. But to what extent, we don't know. I mean, I don't know how much footage we get of Ahsoka in the show. I don't know how major her role could be. I feel like she's probably like last couple episodes. I doubt she's going to be in the season. But then again, where season 1 ended, it's like, where is Baby Yoda going? Obviously to someone who is in tune with the Force, you know? And so I think that that's a la, you know, enter Ahsoka at that point.
Yeah. We know Filoni's real. I mean, what was it? 2 episodes ago, we talked in depth about this.
Last episode.
Was it last episode?
Yeah.
The one that I did 5 seconds ago.
I wasn't going to say a word, but I was listening to it a couple days ago and I'm like, I'm just going to double down what I said 5 days ago, which is we're going to see her for the last 5 seconds of the last episode of season 2. And we'll get a lot more in season 3.
Right. Or not.
I'd love to be wrong. Please be wrong.
I think it's going to be relatively under wraps. Like, I mean, she's been cast and everyone's like, oh, it makes a good fit, but I don't think, you know, Lucasfilm's going to reveal that until the episode plays.
Yeah,
there's enough buzz around this show without having to, you know, roll out like, oh, and you're going to see this character.
I'm personally very bummed that I know this now.
Yeah, it would have been a breathtaking to sort of like turn a corner and see her. It's too bad that we follow this stuff as closely as we do. And all of our listeners do as well. Sorry, but not sorry.
No, I mean, it was hard to miss.
I know, but it would be even more, you know, it would be incrementally better to not know for sure until we see her in full makeup and like, oh, bang, there she is. Like, that would be amazing. Regardless, it's going to be great. And also, Ahsoka is like a character that, like, if you know Ahsoka, you love her. But if you're a casual Star Wars fan and you're just like, we're, you know, got caught up in the buzz around Mandalorian season 1 and we're like, oh, that was a fun ride, you know, you won't know this. That's and you'll see her and you probably won't even know who she is, really.
Yeah.
But it's like that would be an Easter egg for Filoni people and, you know, people who love the Clone Wars and people like our listeners that do a deeper dive and do all that.
But Ben, you might have hit the nail on the head. This might be them priming the non EU Star Wars fans. I think they didn't realize how many people who are gonna watch this who weren't. Like, I think there's so many people who watch The Mandalorian who just watch the movies, right? So now they're like the people who just watch the movies plus The Mandalorian, right? As opposed to us who watch and read everything, which we're the, I'm going to say, outlier for Star Wars fans.
Yeah.
And so I think you might have hit the nail on the head where they're like, maybe they leaked this so that they can prime the general populace to be like, this is a character that's coming. It's
learn Ahsoka, who it is.
Yeah, so that it actually gets, so I wonder if that's what's going on.
I mean, and there is, if you're a Star Wars fan and you're looking for Star Wars content right now, you have I mean, this Clone Wars season is all about her. It is. It's really a celebration of Ahsoka. So I think, I mean, that, I don't know, that the lays the groundwork well and or, you know, paying attention, then and it'll be great.
Yeah. So all that buzz about Ahsoka is in the Clone Wars. Let's check it out.
Yeah. That, and Star Trek, some great, exciting. And one more thing, though, you've wrapped this up beautifully. I just want to say it's great to hear more news about the Cassian series, period.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
You know, like the fact that it's actually moving is amazing, because it's just one of those things. It's like, yeah, I want that too. I definitely want that series. I'm glad that it's just nice to see some movement going on there. So, yeah, it's great. Bunch of great content. Sure to come soon. Commander, contact
your troops. Now from the front lines of the other MCGs, Commander Cody's Clone Wars Conspectus. Very good, sir.
Thank you, Cody. Okay. So, hey, Clone Wars Conspectus, you know it, you love it. Here we are. We're going to go back over what will be the final arc of the Clone Wars series. And I'm very excited because we've now officially kicked Clone Wars into another gear. And it was apparent right from the first image you see of this episode.
Yeah. Can we talk about that for a second?
More than a second, I think.
You guys want to talk about the original score?
Sure, but I want to talk about how smart I am first, and then we can talk about the music stuff.
Okay, sure.
Adam, so, how smart are you?
I'm very smart. I'm so smart that when I was doing the dishes 2 days ago and listening to our last episode, I said, you know what, Adam? You're right. This last four arc should be produced as a movie. And then this started today.
You did say that.
And I went, you know, Adam, you should listen to Adam. Adam is very smart. Adam knows what Adam is talking about.
You're
That's
right,
my
man.
Point. It was shot as a movie. It was shot as a movie, and they split it apart to do four episodes instead.
So there's like the Lucasfilm name screen, like splash screen, which looks like it was ripped out of like 1989.
It was amazing.
Which is amazing. Yeah. And it was like, what the heck is that? And then they actually do a mini crawl with a red Clone Wars logo, which has always been yellow, and it was red for this one because I think we're now officially overlapping with Revenge of the Sith.
Yeah. And they do the sting, the music sting.
It's also Maul season.
Yes. I mean, they used real John Williams score for this.
Yeah.
In a lot of places. Away. Yeah.
It blew me away in this episode.
Yeah. Now you can talk about score, Grant, since we're talking about
well,
it.
Well, I was blown away that Kevin Kiner's music didn't, we didn't hear Kevin Kiner in this episode, and we got the Star Wars theme. We got a more Star Wars music later in the episode. Throughout the episode, there are classic Star Wars themes, John Williams music throughout this episode. And this episode does feel, to your point, Adam, it does feel very filmic. It feels very cinematic. The cinematography of this episode, the kind of the animated camera movement and motivation of the camera is beautiful. It's gorgeous. Like, this episode is so beautifully animated. And it's basically that fantasy of what you wanted with the Death Watch, the kind of revolt on Mandalore and some of that imagery. You really got everything you wanted in this episode in terms of the feud between the Mandalorian factions. Yeah. It was just stunning. The war tactics and how that was shot. The early scenes with Anakin and Obi-Wan. Let's jump to the beginning. The beginning was incredible when Anakin and Obi-Wan are on, I believe the planet's Yubama, and they're fighting off a separatist army there. And that, just the choreography, just the stunt that Anakin pulls, the reveal of the troopers under the bridge was possibly my favorite moment of the episode.
And also like the emotional shift from like you see. All these troopers getting mowed down, the 212th, which is Obi-Wan Kenobi's legion, the yellow troopers.
Cody.
And Obi-Wan jumping at Cody. Yeah, our boy Cody, for which this conspectus is named.
Yeah.
But Obi-Wan saves his life. They're in desperation mode. They're pulled back to tactical positions. And then Anakin shows up, and it's just like the whole mood changes. And it's like, really adds so much gravity to who Anakin is at this point in time, like where they are at the end of the Clone Wars. Like, we have these seasoned veterans, but at this point, it's like, it does feel like the pupil has surpassed the master.
Yeah.
I and have this is coming from a diehard Obi-Wan
fan. Yeah, me too. I have two notes back to back. Best Obi-Wan intro ever? Question mark. Followed by best Anakin intro ever? Question mark. Like it was amazing. The animation on Anakin just standing straight up and just slightly dodging blaster bolts as he's having a conversation is full Anakin. Like it totally demonstrates why Anakin was the chosen one, the one with the most force. Like it was amazing. It was the most Anakin we've ever seen Anakin.
There's even a shot of him with his back to the army and they're firing at him and he's dodging bullets without looking at them.
Yeah. It's awesome.
Not bullets, but blaster fire. Grant, you said something about having a synopsis. Shall we? If you haven't seen this yet, please do. Thank you for listening.
Yeah. So after the events on Yubama, where Anakin and Obi-Wan successfully defeat a kind of a separatist regime there, Ahsoka comes into play, and she appears via holo projection, and Anakin sees her for the first time, which is a very climactic moment. Which is it's very eventful. Anakin's emotion is off the charts. It's interesting. It's more development for Anakin. Ahsoka then alerts Anakin and Obi-Wan that to Darth Maul's location. I guess he's no longer Darth. But the news of Grievous's attack on Coruscant and Palpatine Grievous's attack on Coruscant and Palpatine's capture forces a difficult decision for the Jedi. This is the Disney Plus summary. So this isn't my words, but that pretty much sums it up. So it's basically a difficult choice wherein Anakin and Obi-Wan hear about the capture of Palpatine, the siege on Coruscant, and also the revolt, the attack on Mandalore. And Maul's location, and they have to decide whether to go back to Coruscant and combat Grievous or help Bo-Katan and Ahsoka on Mandalore. And that is the basis of the episode.
Yeah.
So let me ask you a very Sophie's Choice type of question right now. So about 15 minutes into this episode, actually about probably 5 to 10 minutes into this episode, our lines diverge because... Yeah. We get the, I was just so, it just made me so happy that we get this alarm that basically Anakin and Obi-Wan are going off to do what they do in episode 3. They're going off because there's the attack on Coruscant. And then our diverging line is Ahsoka going to Mandalore with her. We'll talk about who she's going with in a moment. Which storyline would you want to follow more? If you can only follow one.
Well, you know where I are, man.
Yeah, I know.
You know where I always reside. Like, I feel like the Lucasfilm choice is obviously the best.
Is fair.
And how, as the title story, how do you not go with the thing where Grievous has captured the Chancellor? You know, like that's the most important story in the galaxy. So that's where.
Fair enough. That is a fair answer.
That's tough for me to answer, but I do like that this episode highlighted Ahsoka's journey instead of Obi-Wan and Anakin's, and I think I don't know. There's a lot of politics we could discuss right now, and I think Obi-Wan kind of takes a back seat in this episode, and kind of just I don't know. He says a few things that I disagreed with. Like I felt like the dialogue was a bit odd, especially when Ahsoka is. Ahsoka's trying to help them in the struggles or against Mandalore and all this kind of stuff. And Obi-Wan, I think, dismisses Ahsoka and says she's not part of the Galactic Republic, the Grand Republic Army.
Yeah, she's
or something
not.
Like that. And I was like, whoa, this discounts like if there were, you know, in the past hundreds of thousands of years, like if Jedi were ever sell swords, like it totally discounts that idea. Like maybe so Jedi had never worked, you know,
she's
freelance.
Not a Jedi though.
Right. I'm not saying like, but anyone who had been trained in the force had never come into the fold and worked in any kind of military campaign. It's just unheard of. It's like once you're out. That's kind of bizarre. I feel like maybe bring her in. Like I don't know. I didn't really understand that part.
So a couple of things. I feel like at the end of the day, they're kind of tied into what happened in the prequel, so they can only do so much. So there is I was doing the same thing where I'm like, would Obi-Wan actually do this, or is this because they're whatever? But to be devil's advocate to myself, because why not? I feel like at the end
I'm
of the,
here. Don't worry, I'm a
guy. No, shut up, guys. So I feel like at the end of the day, I feel like at the end of the day, this kind of is just another demonstration of how far the Jedi have fallen, right? And Obi-Wan is part of that fall.
Yes.
Yeah.
He is, because he follows the Jedi. He even believes in it. And it's like, he believes in the letter of the law. He is the white knight. Yeah. That's just like, oh, I'm he's the marshal that's going to do it. And like, at this point, the Jedi, unfortunately, have fallen to the, you know, they are a tool of the Republic, and they are generals now. They're not these Taoist monks that we,
but for him to even say that line, the Grand Army of the Republic, it's just like, when did Obi-Wan wholeheartedly believe in this militant uprising, this newly created clone army? When did he
look at the next scene when Ahsoka and Anakin are walking through the hallways and they're getting saluted like military salutes as military commanders. The Jedi are no longer Jedi. They're commanders. They're military.
And Ahsoka is totally unfazed by that kind of military prowess and being offering these kind of units and these being offered, you know, a partition of Anakin's 501st. Like, she it doesn't really, I guess that moment means a lot to her.
She's the only true Jedi in this entire time, in my opinion, which is why I'd rather press, because all the other Jedi have been swallowed by a bureaucracy.
Yeah.
And that was her point, and that was a point that sort of didn't sit well with me, where she's like, how could you go and save the Chancellor when you have a whole planet of people that are under threat? So you're choosing one life over many, like, okay, but you can't really boil it down like that.
Yeah.
It's war that's lasted years and cost, you know, millions, billions of lives, you know, is now coming to a head. Like, obviously you have to go do that. Like, one planet, you can't prioritize one planet over, I mean, another, which is Coruscant, which is under siege again. And I don't know.
But by the way, Anakin comes up with the most Jedi solution of all of them, which I think is also poignant, right? Because both Ahsoka and Obi-Wan are arguing the extremes. I have to go do this. You have to go do this. And Anakin's the one that says, no, we'll go save the Chancellor. You go save Mandalore, right? Which I think is such a Jedi moment of just like, no, what if there's a solution to this that we're not seeing?
Yeah. And they did end up, they found the crack in that system. They found the little gap in the red tape to make it work out. And I mean, it seemed very on brand for Obi-Wan. He's taken more of a back seat. Like, it's just who he is. He's like, and I mean, it culminated in one line where it was just like, where he's being confronted by Bo-Katan, like the sister of his former love, he watched die at the hands of Maul, Duchess Satine. She's like, I thought you cared about her once. And he's like, I did, but I'm not going to let to a fault. He's like, I'm not going to let my personal feelings cloud this judgment. I'm going to.
He's like, guys, listen, I defeated that guy already. Like, I'm not going to go back and take out the same guy I defeated.
There is that line, though, which is great, where he's just like, oh, and Ahsoka, he's like, I suggest you capture him. He seems to be, you know, disabused of the notion of dying.
Yeah.
You know, he's like,
That was for me. That was for the only fan out there who's kind of like, he died in The Phantom Menace. Why bring him back? I still don't know why he's back in Clone Wars. I don't know why he's a main feature in Rebels. I feel like you could have done a wholly entirely different Sith in Rebels and had this beautiful arc. But nonetheless, Maul is back in this episode. This is our first glimpse of Maul in this new season. And it was breathtaking, interesting, also kind of confounding. Like, why are you here? Was kind of his big notion when we got to him.
Yeah. So a lot happened. This is a little bit of a longer episode. It was closer to 30 minutes.
Yeah.
As opposed to 20. So it's a full, and it felt like 45. Like it did. There was a lot that happened in this. There was many scenes. But let's backtrack just a little bit, because I want to like give some sort of rough chronological movement through this. So we have the first battle there, and then we have, you know, Anakin's called back to the ship. He's by his commander. The commander's like, you're going to want to see this in person. And sure enough, it's Ahsoka returning. And another sort of head scratcher was like, they're returning like they were long lost friends. But like in real time, I think it's only been like a week.
It's unclear. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
But it was like, because we saw at the beginning of the season, it was like her going away. Like it was like a week of events occurred.
But
he was like, I haven't seen you in so long.
Timelines don't matter in Star Wars.
See, right. I felt like
Empire.
2 years had passed, or like a year and a half had passed.
Felt like that, but it didn't, because the beginning of the season was her driving away from Anakin on a speeder bike and pushing into the platform on the thing. Like it happened immediately.
When the second movie in the entire series, Empire Strikes Back, Timelines don't matter. Don't do it. It's that way darkness lies, trying to pull apart how long.
Right, exactly.
So it took as long as it needed for emotional growth.
Exactly. But it did deliver a very emotional scene. So they agreed to have like partition off some of Anakin's 501st division, including Rex. They decided to promote Captain Rex to commander and have him essentially lead the siege. But as like a special token of their appreciation to Ahsoka, they all painted their 501st mask with her face on it, which was
awesome.
Amazing. They really played up the emotion of these scenes where in ways they had never done in any of the seven seasons of this. And the Clone Wars animated series is amazing. It's heart-wrenching. It's lovely. They do a lot of amazing things. But this was like really the most emotional tone I think I felt in any of it.
Agreed.
And then he ultimately gives Ahsoka's lightsabers back to her, which was another interesting moment. He's like, I might have made them better. And it looks like he actually put new crystals in them because they're blue now. Yeah, and used to be like green and yellow.
I think the blades are girthier now. Like if you go look back at Clone Wars and Rebels, like the lightsaber blades feel like pencil thin.
Yeah,
in those shows,
and especially
in these shows, the lightsabers Rebels look they were way pencil. Better.
Yeah, the animation's definitely changed. They are a little more fluid too when she's spinning them, which I like. I think it looks more realistic. There's some there's some trailing effects.
Yeah. Did you notice in that they did like the catch up part? They were like, and previously they actually showed General Grievous from the movies, like not from the animated series. They just showed General Grievous.
Oh, really? I didn't catch that. That's amazing.
I was like, wow, that's really high definition, like CGI. And I'm like, oh, wait, that's
did they really? Because it was a new frame of Grievous, but it did look really good. Like it was new animation.
No, it was General Grievous. It was like live action footage.
Oh, wow. I got to look back at that because it looked really cool. He was like kind of skulking in that big long cloak of his.
Yeah.
That was cool. So Ahsoka and the action, like when she's jumping around, when they do a sail on to Mandalore and the city of Sidari, when that whole gunship scene where she is like
amazing,
jumping, she jumps on a Death Watch Mando and like rides the Mando to like the next gunship and like, wow. That was the action was crazy.
For me, this really picked up on her last arc in season 6 because showed good Jedi she was, like how much Anakin has taught her and how she's matured as a Jedi. Because like the whole of the Coruscant Guard can't catch her because she's like she's too good, you know, like she's amazing. And like this picked up right where that left off, where she's like she's an amazing Jedi, amazing Jedi.
She took all the best of Anakin without any of the baggage.
Right. Totally.
Yeah. Exactly. And that showed it. Like, so the Captain Rex thing, he's like, oh, do you want a gun? She's like, I'm sorry, I didn't get your jab. She's like, it's cool. I don't need one. And then just does like a really Anakin-esque move to get down. And it's another.
She's like, she's gung-ho like Anakin, but just more calculating and more zen, I would say. Like, she doesn't have that kind of aggression, emotion, attachment, all that kind of stuff that Anakin brings into the fray. The action in this episode.
Still, she killed a bunch of Mandalorians on the way.
Yeah, she did.
She was awesome.
And all through the same way, which was the Boba Fett way, which was affecting their jetpacks. And they
not all of them. There was some she straight up just like
cut. Nice.
But there was definitely one where she like hit the jetpack and he was like, whoa.
There was a few, but
and it was like, you know, a barge or whatever. So that was amazing. And then she's on the ground and we're off and they're hunting Maul through the city and they're just like, they know he's in there somewhere, but they don't know where. It's a trap, yada yada.
Yeah. Right. Bo-Katan goes to the throne room. Ahsoka goes into the sewers and the undercity conduits. And I just find it hilarious that Maul sort of dwells in like these in underground sewers. Like,
well, it was a trap. Yeah. Right? And like this is a way to sort of separate her forces and figure that out. And It worked. I don't know if he lives down there, but it makes sense that you would find him down
Much
there.
Like the Sisyphus Association that we got. Yeah. Freddie Prinze Jr. He's always at the bottom, right? He's at the
very
bottom.
True.
Yeah.
But this time he's gone up a little bit because there's no spider legs, so that's good. But at that moment, the moment that was in the tunnels was very horror movie reminiscent. There was something about the scoring of it that was very unsettling. I actually really enjoyed it, where I'm like, I know what's going to happen. We know that he's going to come skulking out of the shadows at some point. But because we knew it, we were anticipating it, and with the musical cues, every time she'd go around a corner, I'm like, Maul? Like, I was just waiting for him to jump out at her. So it was kind of neat the way they did it.
Yeah.
Playing on expectations. Yeah.
Right. You saw them getting hunted. I really like the Siege of the Throne Room by Bo-Katan.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
Orions. It's the owl. What are they called? The Night Owls, I think, is what her faction is called.
Mm-hmm.
The Night Owls. Yeah. Mm. That's her elite unit is the Night Owls. You see the eyes above the visor. That's her group. And you get to see Bo-Katan shine and the differentiation between her and her sister. She's a fighter. And I liked the fact that the proxy leader that Maul's put in place had this really ornate, Mandalorian armor and still had Mando helmet. And like when he was defeated, his helmet fell off. And, I don't know. It was cool that he had the full outfit there and got
half. Yeah. I'm still utterly confused about Mandalorians. Like I had always thought they were more they related more to how they appeared in the Tales of the Jedi comic, and that they were more tribal and spacefaring and nomadic, and this guy you're talking about, Olmec, I think he's the leader the Mandalorian of the Death Watch just under Maul. And his armor looks very ornate. The city of Sidari looks very illustrious and kind of ornate as well, and it's just interesting. They have Japanese influence. There's there's Spartan influence. There's Viking influence. There's Comanche influence. There's so much to the Mandalorians that we could unpack for episodes and episodes. That I'm just fascinated by them. It's hard to really pinpoint what they represent.
I think
in our own earthly history.
I think we're getting a parallel storytelling with the Mandalorians and the Old Republic, where I feel like this is what we're actually going to end up learning probably through the Mandalorian and other stuff, is that this time of history that we see in the Clone Wars is really the only time we see the Mandalorians are this weird 5-year gap, right? It's the only time we really see them in New EU, is that they were very like they had gone, they had become too big for themselves. They had gone very like ornate, and this is not true to them, that when we come back to what we see in the Mandalorian, this is closer to their truer roots, right? This tribalism, this more like warrior based society. That's my guess is where we're going to get this,
to the connectedness to the natural world, which seems like a big theme in the Mandalorian.
I think we'll connect back to what you were saying last week, Grant, because we still haven't heard either of the two people following Bo-Katan speak. Right.
The armor could be.
Yep. One of them's going to be Emily Swallow. I swear it's going to happen. It's still going to happen.
So there are a couple more candidates that were brought up here. Was a first commander for the Night Owls, and I'm trying to find her name. It was called like Ursa, I think. That was
Ursa Wren. That's Sabine's mom.
Yeah. Oh, that's Sabine's mom. Okay, so that's not her. The other one, the one that I think actually could be the armorer is Rook Cast. Mm-hmm. So she's actually in Maul's military. She is like a second to Gar Saxon, and he is, elite squad. He's been like one of the first in command for Maul. You know, he's a violent guy. He's a Warhawk sort of character, whatever. But Rook is like the other one. I just really think that because when we see the armor, she has the horns.
Right.
I feel like she has a past with Maul, so she might be in his thing. So Rook Cast is another ally of Maul's. She's an elite Mandalorian follower. She's more empathetic than Saxon. She's worried about Maul's survival. I could see her just sort of like, she's a devotee of the faith. And, this is just another thing. And if like when her leader gets killed or murdered or exiled, she just moves on to the next person, is like, OK, I go with the strongest one. I don't know. That's my dark horse now for who.
Oh, I like that. I like that a lot. Yeah.
Yeah, that's interesting. I mean, I'm also wondering why this revolution or this coup isn't talked about in The Mandalorian. Like, we only talk about the Purge in The Mandalorian, whereas we don't talk about the Death Watch or Maul, and where they could very easily talk about the Mandalorians who had been corrupted by the Dark Lord. Because essentially, in this, they call Maul a Lord. In this, Olmec, I think, refers to him as the Lord.
Well, and our Lord, yeah.
I'm like, why? Give me all that beautiful dialogue of, like, the usurper and the Lord and hint to Maul. Like, really build out that lore to the point where the galaxy feels like it's cohesive, whereas I'm not watching something and it feels so disjointed from the other thing.
Two reasons. Dave Filoni. Because he's working on both, right? So I don't think he didn't want to ruin anything that was happening in Clone Wars. And now that Clone Wars is ending before the next season, is I think we're going to see a lot more synergy between Clone Wars and Mandalorian in season two of The Mandalorian.
But wouldn't it feel a bit inorganic if the armor is like, let me talk about the Lord, the Dark Lord who usurped our city, our leadership, and it just happens in season two and she doesn't mention it.
Because it seems like every other show where you drop more lore as you go on, right? Like, she said so little that she was just focused on, who are you? Who's your tribe? Who's this baby? And then she can start spreading it out more to, here's our history.
Right. And the dark Mandos, right? The Mandos who sided with Maul. Right?
Yeah.
And I mean, I'm excited about this because we're going to see the Purge in this.
Yeah.
And this is obviously heavily talked about in The Mandalorian. This is a lot of the motivation for all the Mandalorians. It's not Din Djarin. So we're going to actually see this. So there's plenty of room for more of this lore bombs to drop.
Yeah.
So I think there could be some good stuff in there.
There's also no mention of this is Legends, but in the Tales of the Jedi comic, the Mandalorians played a significant role in sacking Coruscant and sieging Coruscant, should I say, with Exar Kun as their leader in the Legends comics and Tales of the Jedi stuff. And it's like, that's not even mentioned. And so I guess that just doesn't exist.
Season four
That history really doesn't exist. That the history of the Mandalorians as shown in some of the Legends material doesn't really get credence in the new storyline. I don't even want to say the secrets.
Right. Some of it does. It's Legends for a reason, right? So they're going to pick and choose, and they haven't figured out a way how to rope that in yet. It just doesn't fit with the current dialogue, but you never know. I mean, there's going to be more to come. We're obviously focused on Mandalorians for a while.
I have a feeling, not to go back to Karen Travis's Republic Commando series of books, which, by the way, amazing.
Incredible and hold up. And
it's so good.
Commandos.
But her last book got canceled because they were doing this new, they were telling these stories in the Clone Wars cartoons. And so it kind of started to affect her storytelling about what Mandalore was, because a lot of the Republic Commandos are starting to connect back to Mandalore. I feel like we're going the opposite direction now, where they're trying to bring back old ideas surrounding Mandalore, and they're trying to figure out a way to do that without getting rid of what's happened in Clone Wars, right? So I think Filoni's trying to figure out how to kind of, quote unquote, retcon this stuff together.
That's so interesting, because I always thought
mend them both. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
I always thought the Mandalorians lived and died by the kind of culture of having that one war, the one warlord in their leader that is Mandalore. Like, I thought that was the core concept of what the Mandalorians were, was that they had this one warlord who led all of them, and his or her title was Mandalore. And I thought that was so compelling and interesting that it wasn't like the Jedi where everything's egalitarian and there's all the Jedis are kind of given their own sectors of the galaxy. It's more so like there's this one primary warlord. And I always thought that was fascinating material. And I haven't heard that really hasn't been brought into canon.
It's where we're going. It's good. It's where the Mandalorian is going, right? Because it's called
Mandalorian.
Exactly. Right. So they're going to say, this was our history before this weird time where we were egalitarian in nature, which, by the way, that's not me speaking because I believe in egalitarianism, but from the Mandalorian's perspective, this was our weird time. This is where we came from, and this is where we're going, because we survived back then, and the first time we were egalitarian, we got destroyed by an interloper. So that's where we're going with the storyline, is that Din Djarin is going to either become the Mandalorian, the Mandalore, or is going to introduce the Mandalore and bring back the Mandalorians. That's my thought.
I completely believe it, because what I'm thinking, Grant, is that we need to think of the timeline of the Mandalorians in the same way as we look as the rest of the galaxy. It's like ancient Mandalore. Yes, there was a Mandalore. This was the birth of their warrior culture. But what we've seen in the Skywalker saga, we just happen to catch them in the era where it's like they've gone into an era of peace. And then right. where these warring cultures, yeah. really Death Watch, you know, as a weird, essentially, like a class of warriors, terrorists group, you know, even though they really held the Death Watch really held the real, features of Mandalore, of ancient Mandalorian culture in what they were doing. And then now we're seeing a return to that ancient tribalism out of necessity. And that's why it's interesting. I think we're going to see this sort of progression yeah. happening as we move forward with the Mandalorian and whatever yeah. happens next.
In other words, Grant, you're going to get what you want. It's coming. Yeah.
I think there's room there.
Yeah.
And I totally agree with you guys. I feel like what you're talking about, this kind of drifting away from the core concept, their core warrior culture, made possible Jango Fett. You know, I mean, I know yeah. there are lots of people who follow Star Wars who don't think Jango Fett was a Mandalorian, like he didn't devote himself to the Mandalorians, but we don't know. I mean, that information yeah. is yeah. that information is unsaid. It's not written down anywhere, so we don't know for sure. I still, you know, wholeheartedly believe that Jango Fett does subscribe to the Mandalorian culture, and I think that drifting away from their core principles, their core culture, made a Jango Fett possible, like that, and that caused a lot of strife in the galaxy, obviously, with the clone armies and the rise of the Empire. And so I think it's also it's interesting that everyone kind of drifted away from their principles for a period of time, and it caused so much mayhem.
Yeah, well, they had their helmets off. It's like, yeah. whoa, what yeah. are you doing? But yeah. I just, sorry to cut you off, Adam, but I just want to speak to this point is that, like, I think that's what the Mandalorian series is doing yeah. because it's establishing without any doubt that you earn your way into the Mandalorian culture. You can be an outsider, and that's a key part of their culture, is to bring in younglings, and I forget the terminology they use, but
foundlings.
Thank you. You bring in foundlings, and that could explain Jango Fett, Boba Fett, you know, all of that. Like, that's still part of it, and that's what they're yeah. establishing. So that's helping to reinforce and maybe lay some seeds for Jango Fett and Boba Fett. But also, it's just going to take one line, man. It's just going to take one line where it's just like, oh, of that reminds me of the time of the Mandalore, you know? And yeah. then suddenly all of that Karen Travis stuff is in. It's in. It's just going to, in one of these series, whether it's Clone Wars, probably it's going to be the Mandalorian. And then boom, it's done. They're just waiting for the right time to sort of, you know, set the time periods right. Make sure all these stories land in the right way. Because they have this series going on, which obviously affects the Mandalorian series, and then they can start moving backwards in time and talk about the things that happen there.
Right. And remember, most people either only dine on the movies and the Mandalorian. A lot of people don't watch the Clone Wars. So when they then tell the backward story of what old Mandalore was like, it's going to seem like a blip on the radar to the people who watch just the TV and movie stuff, right? Where it's just like,
right.
or just the live action stuff.
But basically. It will open a gateway to the Legends material. And
for the rest of it, yep.
It'll open a gateway to more new canon material that will enhance. Will enhance. You have a rogue Mandalorian that just
yeah.
escaped. I have a foundling that just went to the restaurant
right behind me. It'll open the, you know, new ways to enhance and tell stories around what's already been established yeah. in Legends about Mandalorians.
Can I ask one kind of final non-Mandalorian question? And it's more of a process question.
As long as it's not final, yes.
Not final, but we're getting there. I think. So on May 4th, they're going to show the last part of this four-part series. So they're doing it a few days early.
Yes.
I have a feeling on May 4th or May 5th, they decide to drop a complete movie version of this. Don't you think they're going to do that? The way this is like, you can watch this now as a movie.
As a movie.
Yeah, I think we're going to get that. I think it's going to be like, watch the first movie and the last movie. That would be great. Up next, suggested for you.
That is great. I would love that. And actually, this was the final thought that I wanted to mention, was that they just made the announcement that, so like, if you were going to follow their their progression. There's going to be four more episodes. This was the first one, and they release every Friday. The last Friday would have been May 8th. Instead, right. They're going to release it on May the 4th, which is a Monday, which we will be doing a special podcast.
Yeah, we'll do an early podcast.
Podcast around that because it's a celebration. And who knows what will be announced on May the 4th, Star Wars Day, well, whatever.
We'll cover that and the first part of the Mandalorian documentary.
That's oh, right. Yes. Right. Yeah. We're going to get all that. So that was a good special announcement. So May the 4th, you'll get the last installment. So it's nice. We won't have to wait a full week for the what will be, I'm sure, a very exciting conclusion to this. And so we'll be there for that. And hopefully y'all will be too. Anything else, guys, you wanted to talk about here? I mean,
final thought was I want the action figure of the woman Death Watch Mando who was in the sewers, who fired the missile. I want that figure real bad. I think she has a really cool helmet design. I'm always looking at helmet designs. And nice. That's definitely what I want.
I love the Maul coloring Mandalorians. I want one. I want a Maul colored Mandalorian action figure. And the Ahsoka clone trooper warrior. Those are my next black figures.
That would just be have sweet. Them
facing each other on one of my shelves. That's all I want.
That would be great. Definitely.
Yeah.
They played that perfectly. The way that just the scene of Ahsoka walking down the hallways getting saluted and she was like, what's going on? And it's like, you know, real respects real is essentially what you know, Anakin said to her and was just like, you know, they respect you. You save them. And then we saw her save them and be the person she is. She truly cared about her troopers and the troopers recognized it. And then just the way that they haphazardly painted their helmets to be like, we're your crew.
You want to see that episode where it was like the arts and crafts episode where they found the paint, like the pigments, they started painting the helmets. Like only one of the clone troopers was really like a good artist and he was the only one who could do it. So it took a few days.
Totally. It was great synergy with, Battlefront 2 for those that play it. It was because the 212th, you could see the color, like they caught heck for not making the 212th exact to the Clone Wars series when they released it initially. And it took them like 6 months to do it right. But they made sure they were like, no, we're going to get the painting on all the troopers exactly right for all the, all the different classes. And now it's this, you can be like, seven different battalions in Battlefront 2. It's like, oh, you want to be Yoda's like group, you can be the 44th. You want to be Obi-Wan's, you can be the 212th, you can be the 501st. You can there's a scout troopers, there's a whole thing you can do. They did a really nice job. And so the synergy between when in that first scene with the 212th, you're like, oh, this is it looks exactly like Battlefront 2, which I'm sure is no accident.
Yeah.
A little news there. They've obviously had some holdups. There was supposed to be a new content drop called the Scarif drop. They're going to reintroduce Scarif material. So they've already done the Age of the Republic supremacy group. They've done the Age of Resistance, which is the sequel trilogy drop, and now the last group they're going to bring is the original trilogy to supremacy. But they've been held up for obvious reasons. So that they've just been it's been a month now where they're like, no, it's coming. And I'm sure they're working frantically, but obviously.
Of course. Things have happened. Yeah.
And I think we all have the game downloaded on our PlayStations right now.
Yeah, and we sure do.
Adam
got on with me. We did a little co-op in Felucia, which was really fun.
It was a lot of fun. I died quite a few times playing as Anakin, but once I got in there and
yeah, no, you rank up Anakin. You can rank up your players in co-op, which is important. So Adam went from 0 to 5 or 6 with Anakin, which is impressive. And we had a good time, man.
Let's see if we can get some games in this week. I think my week's starting to lighten up a little bit, so we'll. Sure. We'll talk offline, see if we can do
that. You know what would light a fire in the multiplayer front for Lucasfilm is you put out all the bounty hunters and you create a battle royale mode, and that's it. Boom. Done. You're done after that.
as a bounty hunter,
an open world kind of Nar Shaddaa, kind of like, you know, crime infested backwater world. All the bounty hunters, you find the boxes to pick up the loot, to pick up the good weapons, to pick up the armaments.
Yeah. And they all have interchangeable weapons.
And you just go at it.
I'm IG-88, your Bossk, right? Your four bomb. Like,
that's it. That's it. That would, I think everyone would jump in at that
point. I'm not a Battle Royale fan. I've had some people invite me to Modern Warfare because it's cross-platform.
Yeah.
But I like what you're saying. Like, if there's a Star Wars version,
I'll be there.
That's what I'm talking about. Yeah, yeah. A Star Wars version to compete with everyone else. I think it would win out. Honestly, I think it would win out. Yeah.
Right now, I'm the guy. So now they also show your like rank on the whenever you flash over to your the roll call, and my I'm gonna brag right now, but my officer 50th like,
in the country.
Yeah, and so they've allowed you to rank up to 1,000, which is like nearly impossible to do, but like I'm ranked 640 right now, and like the mean like average is like 100.
Oh wow!
Like the other leaders there, and there's like two. So I've been playing a minute. Five. So if y'all want to play, I'm in. Yeah,
I've got it. I'm ready for the next call. When you put out the call, I'll be.
All right.
We'll text next week. We'll
you have my blaster.
All right.
Nice. It would be fun if we could do it with some of our listeners too, because I know y'all.
That would be. Honestly, any of you interested in gaming with any of us, we're around. So
What is our email now? Like, if you want to email us and
foreworldnews@gmail.com.
Yeah, get at us, man. I'll give you my I'll actually open up because I used to get randos asking me to join their stuff all the time, so I just stopped it. But I think I'll give you my gamer tag, and if you want to get in on a game, we'll do it. Yeah.
We'd love to.
If you That'd listen so to our fun. Podcast, you're in. I don't care.
Yeah.
Let's do a thing.
Just you can Twitter, you can Twitter us.
Yeah.
Old man Adam.
Grex always does a closing tag at the end.
Listen to Grex. Do those. Get in touch with us those ways. We'd be happy to play with you.
Yeah, absolutely.
And like, follow, and share wherever podcasts are found. We're probably there, right? Yeah, probably there.
I mean, if they're cool, I know a lot of hardcore Star Wars fans. But it's like only a few of them are like, all right, I'm willing to like follow what's going on. And it's like, that's cool, man. If you want to be a casual Star Wars fan, that's great. Yeah. I'm glad you love the series. But like, if you want to go down the rabbit hole, I'll be right next to your side and be like, let's go down the rabbit hole.
And I will say this, if you want to be a casual Battlefront 2 gamer, you are more than welcome, because that's me. Yes. And I played with Ben last week, and Ben was very gracious to the amount of times I got shot in the back of the head not paying attention. He never got angry. He was very, and he also was like, lots of good tips. So he's totally chill and loves playing with everyone. So,
dude, it's fun. Yeah. Dude, I die a million times in this thing. Yeah. Like, I just throw, like, sometimes you just got to throw yourself in the battle and be like, oh, this is going on, you know? And like, it's just so much fun when it was like, all right, I'm Obi-Wan and you're Anakin Skywalker and we're on Geonosis and we're like sieging the thing. Like,
pretty amazing.
We're back to back in the middle of like, you know, 40 B1 battle troopers and fending them all off. Like, how cool is that? It's a great experience.
Guys, you're talking to like this is 2005 Battlefront. Come on. Yeah. Be careful, guys.
It is like the co-op is 2005 Battlefront. It is. It is. They don't have as many.
Really? You have a massive map and you can just like run across the sky as Mace Windu.
Well, so, all right. So
I missed that.
That's the one thing. Like, we don't have Mace Windu. We don't have Ki-Adi-Mundi. But we have Yoda. We have Obi-Wan. We have Chewbacca. We have Anakin Skywalker. You know, that's pretty cool.
Pretty cool. I am down to play. Guys, this weekend we're playing. Listeners, join us.
Yeah.
Done. Awesome. And who knew that's the way we were going to end this episode, but
who knew?
Y'all are great. We love you. We're very grateful for you listening to us. We've got so many exciting things coming up that we want to do, new exciting guests and new things we're going to cover. This is the highlight of my week every week. I can't wait to talk about more things Star Wars. So thanks for coming along for the ride. And as always, may the Force be with you.
This is Grex Kondak signing off. For the latest breaking news, follow @CoreWorldNews on Twitter and Instagram. Thank you and good night.
Remember, the Force will be with you always.